Welcome back to the Black Is 10-Minute Break with yours truly, KC Layman. We have a round table tonight. Tonight's guests are Tash Mosley, talent manager and film producer, Jay Lewis, the Black Is resident educator, Chris Layman, yours truly's husband. He's an accountant, friend, father, just my solid rock. Thank you, baby, for coming. Malcolm Darrell, our freelance theater producer and a good friend. Toria Williams, a Los Angeles administrator. And finally, Stacey Brewer, our resident Black Is counselor. And tonight's topic is HBCUs versus TWIs. For those listeners out there that don't know what those acronyms stand for, HBCUs are historical Black colleges and universities. Correct me, people, if I'm incorrect. And TWIs are traditional white universities. So the question is, which one is the best choice for us as Black people? At the table, we do have, I believe, three graduates of the HBCUs and four of us that went to TWIs. Mm-hmm. So let's talk, people. I'll start it off. When Chris and I compare our college experiences, I think we both have really rich experiences, but I cannot front. There are things that he shares with me that I'm totally jealous that I didn't get a chance to experience because I did not go to a HBCU. However, I'm sure he could say the same about some of the things I experienced at UCLA. That is my alma mater. So, don't all speak at once.
I mean, I want to know what are these exciting things at HBCU.
Okay, what are some of
the differences? Because I mean, I went to Cal, UC Berkeley, so
I mean, one of the things is, of course, the music. I know, you know, the football games don't compare to a, you know, SC 80,000 stadium, but you know, the halftime shows. Watch out. You know, with the band, of course.
And can you tell us what school you attended?
I attended Hampton University, the real HU.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. Just being around your people, it's something that, you know, as I went into it, I knew being around these many Black folk would never happen again. Mm. And it's something I wanted to take advantage of. Education is great. There's no difference I see, but I didn't go to a TWI, so I can't really speak on it.
Yeah, the one thing that I noticed when we do talk about the differences, Chris seemed to have a much stronger support system for his academic career than I did. At UCLA, I definitely feel like I had to seek it out and then create it for myself, as where his was built in. So the idea of retention is something that I know, I guess, the HBCUs keep at the forefront for their students. If you're coming in, we want you to matriculate out. And
that support system, too, can be the very reason why someone wouldn't go to an HBCU. Like, you know, when you're a freshman, you might have a curfew where you have to be in the dorm. There was definitely a curfew. I went to Morehouse about when women could be in the dorm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, college is there for freedom, you know. And, well,
to it's, there for an
it's there for an education, but it's the first time people leave home and decide to spread their wings. They do have a vested interest in making sure you go to graduate school or wherever. But I found the one thing I appreciated, the one thing I appreciated the most was that I didn't realize that Black people were so diverse until I went to an HBCU. I was like, oh my God, you're rocking a Mohawk. And this was a Mohawk in like the early 90s or the mid 90s. Or, you know, you're a senator's son or you're they ran the gamut. And I was just so in awe of, like, you know, I thought being from LA and talking a certain way meant that that's how you defined intelligence. Mm-hmm. And I realized you can talk with the strongest Southern drawl and be whip smart. Mm-hmm. And that's what I appreciate, just seeing Black people of all shapes, color, and sizes be academically aggressive. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's actually something, too, that's very fun that happens is when the courting system at HBCU, women are very keen about who is going to be, who's, you know, a good catch. Mm-hmm. Like, if they're smart, and if they have, like, hustle, and, like, I appreciated that.
That's so funny that you said if they're smart and everybody's on a college campus. Because you, it's a, I mean, it's just interesting that you said that they're smart, because, you know, you would presume that everybody who's on a college campus is smart. But I was going to say, I was wondering about the idea of, you know, on, first of all, I'm not used to that, this acronym TWI. I've never used that before in my life. I'm just going to go with a white institution. This idea that one of the things that we did was, it was about being a part of an affinity group, right? So you were part of the African Student Union, the Black Student Union. Mm-hmm. And even within that, you had some diversity, but, you know, we were sort of all fighting for the same causes and fighting for the same struggle and resources or whatnot. But it's interesting to hear. I was wondering if you could expand on that more, because where did you find... I found that at Berkeley, we were always trying to be one unit, unified, against a campus that, where we were like less than 4.8%, you know? So it'd be interesting to hear from your perspective, how was it being on a campus where you were the majority, and so there was no need to come together.
To fight. And can I say that's...
a battle for you, and that was like a serious battle for us.
Right.
Like a constant concern.
The thing that's tripping me out is that, okay, so I'm at UCLA, so I'm at your sister school. Mm-hmm. You're Northern, I'm Southern. And there could not be more of a difference, because we were there at the exact same time. The same issues were on the table. But UCLA, for me, the Black community at that time, we were close-knit, but there was definitely a high school cliquishness that existed. The funny thing is, there was a large Northern Cali community at UCLA, and very few of us that were LA natives. And so I wonder if that, although I don't want to make that insinuation, because the Northern Cali people were very, very cool. If anything, the cliquishness came from LA people and their influence on other people, you know what I mean? But it was an overall, I mean, it was good, but like there was definitely a lack of cohesiveness when it came to us trying to make a difference in terms of a battle. Like I remember they had planned a silent protest, and everybody was supposed to go to class with Black bandanas over their mouth, but they didn't tell everybody. They just told their homies. And I'm like, well, this is completely unorganized, because I'm in class talking.
Right.
Nobody gave me the memo. You know what I'm saying? It was a whole bunch of us that were out the loop. And it was like, okay, how do you plan something and you don't include all the Black people on campus, whether we associate all the time or not, you know?
See,
so
we had the same thing happen.
Okay.
Everybody. We made the front page of the Daily Cal the next day.
Okay.
We blocked Sailor Gate, which is the main... I mean, Black folks were on one accord. And I don't know, maybe there's, you know, the historical...
A Berkeley vibe, right?
Right, exactly.
Activist school or whatnot. But I really do... Were you going to answer that question? I was going to say...
Yeah, sorry. Take us off track.
Hear, like, what the differences were.
Well, I know for me, being a little Black girl from Watts and going to Hampton, I had a new definition of what it meant to be Black. Because living in Watts, I had one definition of Black. And I got a little bit of taste of how it could be different because I got bussed out the area. But I knew that if I identified with what was outside of the area, I still wasn't be the little Black Watts girl that I wanted to be. When I moved into Hampton, it was different because Black was redefined. There were, like you said, senators' children, authors, professors, kids who were like, I'm for the environment. It just redefined being Black. And it was like, I fit in here because Black is not one definition. I'm not selling out. I can be Black here because it was redefined. There was this sense of pride that you got. And even though you didn't connect to everybody because you have your haves and your have-nots. The girl who lived downstairs from me got a BMW for graduation. Wasn't happening because I couldn't even go home for Thanksgiving.
Right.
So, but it put in my mind like what Black could be as a Black woman. The support system, amazing. You know, I didn't want curfew, but I know Miss Jake was made sure, and that was my dorm mother, that I wasn't going to be pregnant freshman year.
Right.
Because, you know, it's like, get in, be there. And of course, we can sneak and creep, but your parents appreciate that. So if I were sending my children away, I trust that they're in the hands of someone who has a vested interest in making sure they're still instilling values and character, because that's instilled there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also your community. If you're coming from the West Coast, you still have a sense of community at this school that parents could absolutely say, my kids probably, and not that we all have the same values and moral systems and beliefs, but But there's something, and I don't know what it is, I can't really tap my finger on it, but there's something about being black that whenever you go anywhere, especially if you're black Americans, you know you're going to connect with somebody else who's black, right?
Mm-hmm. So
there's something about that that I'm sure was...
Except when you from come that, back to L.A.
for that very reason, that desire to connect with other black people wasn't implicit in the experience, because who else were you going to connect with? We're all black, you know? And so you actually started to connect with people whose values were similar to yours. Mm-hmm. At the time, Walter Massey was president. Mm-hmm. And he was head of the National Science Foundation, appointed by Bush. And so he was really adamant about making sure there was a strong Republican student union on campus. And, you know, being a Republican, you would think for the most part, is antithetical to, you know, the modern black experience.
Right,
But, like, people would write op-eds in the school paper talking about how Pan-Africanism is, like, just a joke. Like, please get over it. All y'all talk about Egypt, and most of y'all Negroes didn't come from Egypt. Like, get over yourselves. I mean, really thought-provoking,
wow,
good stuff that black people need to be talking about. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of the diverse things. And then there were a number of black people there who tried to get away from the campus as soon as they got there. Like, I'm going to Emory. I'm going to be at Georgia State, Georgia Tech's parties. I'm just tired of these Negroes. You know, like, I was forced to go here. I had no choice. You know, so, I mean, there was just, you had to connect with people on your value system, not just because you're black and you assume you have a shared experience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The other thing I wanted to touch on with this topic is course offerings. Because the one thing that I do hear from people who attend the HBCUs is that there's, like, mandatory black history courses that students have to take. Maybe not at every school, but I guess some schools make it so that's one of the things that you need to study is your history and knowing who you are. And I know at UCLA, man, you had to seek that out. And if it really wasn't a part of your line of study, wasn't part of your major, then there really wasn't a need to take it unless you could get credit for it, you know, on some other way. Mm-hmm. And so, can any of you all speak to that?
I don't remember being forced to take it, but
okay.
There's no way you could walk on Hampton's campus and not just get history. I mean, the Emancipation Oak was on our campus.
Right.
Right.
And so, you know, and then you walk into these classrooms, I believe it was the Peabody Hall, because it's been a minute. But in the Peabody room in the library, it was a collection of all these historical documents that you really could not check out. You had to sit in the Peabody collection room, and you could find the original writings from slaves and things like that. So you're living and breathing history all day long.
Yeah.
But I do remember my African-American history class being a Jewish man. And he said, what are all y'all, I know everyone in here is thinking, what on this planet, what in the world can this man teach me about my history?
Mm. And he was a scholar.
Indeed, he was. Mm-hmm.
It's interesting because the question was, you know, is it good for our people? And we have, like, lots of testimonies saying that it is. But the reality of the circumstance, I feel, is not all HBCUs fit that mold and that criteria. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the number of HBCUs in comparison to historically white universities and you compare the quality of education, I think there are greater opportunities for our people because there are more white institutions that are strong academically. There may be a handful of HBCUs that are good, but everyone can't go to those schools. So what do you say to the people who...
I'd say that there's some strong validity to that because, I mean, a lot of the HBCUs, like with the exception of Spelman, I know that Morehouse does admit people who wouldn't necessarily meet the bar, and they admit them on a contingency basis. You have to come to summer school, and you need to really bone up on certain. And some people were even put into, I wouldn't say remedial literature classes, but I would say, like, yo, you need to take an extra class,
right,
young man.
The intervention class.
But I think because the mission is to make sure that these kids are educated, and they really strive for that you study abroad and that you do graduate work. And because it's an entire institution that has a vision and a mission, a lot more energy and attention gets devoted to ushering people all the way through. And this is not just, you know, those elite schools like Hampton.
Yeah, because you all did attend the Ivy Leagues of the HBCUs.
This happens, this takes place at, you know, the other schools, whether it's, you know, Bethune-Cookman or... What's the other one in Morgan State? Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of them that dedicate, but I think there's you're right. I mean, if you want to talk about academic prowess, but even still, like, I think it's between FAMU and Morehouse that has, like, the most Black Rhodes Scholars. Like, the majority of Black Rhodes Scholars actually come from HBCUs instead of just, you know, your Stanfords and George Washington University. And, but yeah, I totally agree.
One thing I can say is that postgraduate, when you're in the position of hiring, I'm not going to lie, if I see an HBCU on that application, and I feel like if I went anywhere and put my application in, if it's fellow alumni, they're going to, I don't know that if I were not at a Black institute, they would recognize my name. Maybe. But I know for sure that we're going to stop, you know. And it even links them to the sororities and the fraternities. And not that I was a part of one, but it just is that network. It's a definite network. When you say, I went to Hampton Moore, I went here.
But it could work the opposite as well.
Yeah, surely
could.
If you
have your white counterpart and they see an HBCU, they're for the opposite reasons. Like, they perceive that to be that strong militant, and oftentimes they're intimidated by that.
Now, let me jump in and say that that is absolutely my example, because I didn't go to Spelman because I didn't feel like at the time that the social capital was rich enough for me to be able to parlay that degree. And I opted for UC San Diego, not because I didn't want to make the connections. And I read so much of the literature and had, you know, so many good testimonies from sisters who I had known had gone already. And even though they were repping it as, you know, the Black woman's Harvard, you know, when I started, you know, kind of comparing apples to oranges at that particular time, and let me also qualify that by saying that from that particular historical standpoint, Black achievement was not stage center as it is now. The conversations that we're having about the students who were at Spelman, I had no knowledge of that. You understand what I mean? So I made somewhat of a short-sighted decision, but at the same time, I thought to myself, if this shows up on a resume, it probably would have been more beneficial for me to have done my undergrad maybe at HBCU and then my graduate work at UC San Diego so that I could even out the credibility field, you know? And so, but I still feel like that I missed sort of the that serendipitous moment that happens when you see other Black people on a campus who were striving for the same academic purposes, you know what I'm saying? As opposed to how we had to do, of course, at UC San Diego, find each other. Then you had to tap in and make sure, okay, this person got the same similar consciousness. Nope, nope, not messing with you because you weigh someplace else or whatever. You know what I mean? And so that part of it, now that I think about it, I sort of look longingly back at it, but I did think at the time, this is going to get me farther along than this particular degree is.
And I felt the same way because I got into Spelman and decided to go to UCLA because I told myself, well, the world isn't all Black, so there's no point in me setting myself up in the, you know, really beginning stages of adulthood with this sort of fantastic, idealized, you know, scenario. But in hindsight, sometimes I think to myself it would have been a good move for undergrad. I considered it for graduate work, but because I wanted to go into English literature, I was told by Black and white professors that the HBCUs for grad work was an absolute no-no. They were like, not if you want to be taken seriously as an academic.
I have that bias myself. Like, I don't think I would allow my kid to go to, and this is so hard saying this, a graduate school at a Black school. I just think like, oh, you know, by the time you should do undergraduate at a HBCU, and then by the time you want to get some type of professional degree, why don't you go to the most prestigious
university place you can go possible.
To for that matter. And to answer your thing about the coursework, I was an English major, and I guess as an English major, they did make sure that you had a real understanding of, you know, even the Black dialect, not only Black literature, but like what African American language and its, you know, features, like, yeah, all up in there and stuff like, you know, oh, she be tripping. Like, you know, there's actually an order to these things and they make sense and they communicate something. So you had courses like that.
And that's validation for a lot of people who were, that is their home language. Most
exactly.
of us.
But even in that supportive state, I really want to underscore the competition, the competitiveness, I think was the like most rewarding thing. Because you like, everybody there thought they were hot shit. Everybody. Like, I'm from LA, I'm from DC, I'm from Detroit. We run things.
Right.
And so, like, it was just like you had to just show and prove, and it made you better, like, just being like, I'm gonna do this.
Okay.
I was gonna say that for me, I was accepted to Morehouse, and my decision had nothing to do with my blackness, it had to do with my financial
status. Where's the money?
$21,000 in loan. Right. It was talking 13.
Right.
The math had to make the decision. Right. But I will say that I pursued a degree in theater, and the exposure I had to the performing arts at UC Berkeley, at Zellerbach Hall, and the world-renowned international artists that I was exposed to changed my life. Mm. I don't know if I would have had that at a Morehouse college. I mean, I know you have what's the performing arts center down there? You have the Alliance Theater and all these other performing arts institutions. But for me, I was working with, you know, top of the field designers, directors, artisans who absolutely encouraged me and made different network and links to me for different people in the field. Mm-hmm. I work with Dr. Margaret Wilkerson, who is the foremost authority on Lorraine Hansberry, and she was the chair of African American Studies and the drama department. Mm. And she connected me with a brother who had graduated from Cal, who was now working on the new 42nd Street development project in New York, and I ended up in New York that way. So, I mean, I ultimately want to say I don't think that either one is like good or bad. I think it's all about individual decisions and what's good for you and your life and what you need at that time. Mm-hmm. I would have loved to have been around all black people, but I went to Hamilton and it was a gang of black people.
Right.
But I was also, you know, I was in the music academy, so I love my white folks and my diversity.
Right.
So for me, Berkeley was like I hit the jackpot either way because I was still getting an elevated or augmented experience from my high school experience. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I personally can't definitively say, well, because I went to, you know, Berkeley, I'm better off than somebody who went to HBCU. Because I don't think that's the case at all. Mm-hmm. I think we all have had different experiences.
Right.
And, you know, I thank God that this was what my path and my purpose was. And that's what it was meant to be. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I think everybody here is proof that it's not about the college, it's about the individual.
What you do.
But it depends on your coursework. I mean, when you pick any school in general, you have to understand what the strong major is at that school.
Yeah. Right.
Like, I know at Hampton, their nursing program was off the hook. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of people going there for nursing. Mm-hmm. I know the architect program was pretty good. Business was getting there when I got there. Mm-hmm. But I mean, if you're going to take... And if you're going to take a course at a school that's not really their specialty, then, I mean, of course it's not going to be that great. Mm-hmm. I mean, to your point, you know, if the theater program at Berkeley is three times better than at Morehouse, and that's what you want to do, then...
There is no theater program at Morehouse.
So there was that.
Yeah. But you met a Morehouse actor when I went to grad school at Yale, and he told me some Morehouse non-theater stories.
Wow. I think finances, though, is one of the big things that kept a lot of students out of HBCUs, especially at Hampton. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not getting a scholarship for being black and smart.
Yes. All right.
Right.
Because you are all expected to be black and smart.
That's right.
And write those checks out. Mm-hmm. So, in fact, when I was as a senior, I went through my church's program to get us into school. And our mentor kind of, you know, was like, I'm not feeling Hampton because Hampton didn't accept the fee waivers for applications.
Wow. Okay.
Crucial.
right.
You know, and so things like that kept students away from, you know, the Ivy Leagues and the HBCUs.
There is some red tape. I mean, I can't lie. When you go to a when you're around that black people, the usual stereotypes and all that we deal with do come up, like the red tape. And that was one of the big things. The red tape at Hampton was terrible. If you needed to get your financial issues in order in terms of financial aid, things like
Whipple
that. Whipple barn. It was terrible. From everybody that I didn't have to go through that, but from everybody telling me, like, it was horrible. Like, I'm in line for 3 hours. They don't have this. I mean, you have moments where you know, you love being around your people, and then you're
like, you need a job. I almost feel like financial aid and financial aid and residence hall issues at every school is shitty. It's so shitty. But I know I can bet that I can only imagine the various amounts of stereotypes that you have to come out with and face. And that was one of the things that I thought about when I decided not to go to Spelman. I'm like, is this gonna be like high school part two? Because I'm cool on those Negroes. Like, I loved my graduating class, but I was definitely ready for a different scene. And so that was something that I considered. But let me ask you all this. There's a gentleman that I talked to on Twitter. Stacy and I talked to a brother who is the director of the HBCU Endowment Fund. And he and I have a lot of challenging conversations about this. And one of the things that he is very adamant about is that Black people, one of the things that we are shorting ourselves on by not supporting the HBCUs is just uplifting the community overall, because the HBCUs care about educating us and taking us from not only being scholars, but being people in business and having that like unit that goes from education into the business world, into a position of being able to hire and create jobs. Because we don't do that in large numbers, we've kind of weakened our economic power here in the United States. And he used Brandeis. He actually have an article on the site about this now. He used Brandeis as an example, since Brandeis is historically a Jewish institution and is very clear about that in a lot of their coursework. I think he even laid out for their MBA program. It speaks to the fact that they're teaching people to become knowledgeable about business, but also they teach them knowledge of Judaism so that they can go into the Jewish community and be of benefit there. So it's very specific. They're very clear about that. They're unapologetic about that. And they get their support, as where we don't do that for our schools. And I find it interesting that even when it comes to the graduate program piece, everybody kind of feels HBCUs wouldn't be the way to go. So it's almost like we accept that something that's created for us and by us, it must be subpar to something else? Or has it just been that those schools aren't getting the proper scholarship, the proper funding to bring about greater results? Like, you know, it's for me, it's conflicting, because I feel his point, you know, as somebody who is in support of bolstering the Black community, I completely see where he's coming from. But then from just my personal experience, you know, there's just there's an inner battle there. So as we wrap up, can anybody chime in on that? And we can actually table this for a part two if it's gonna get deep.
I just want to make the one to be made very clear that we're constantly playing the catch-up game.
Constantly.
And I was about to look up when Harvard was founded, but when I want to say like 1500. I don't know. I'm getting it all wrong, but you're talking about hundreds of years before we were even allowed to enter the field of education.
Right.
Right? So we're never going to catch up. And you're talking about hundreds of years for these white, Jewish, whatever institutions to establish themselves as Ivy League and as the standard of which we measure excellence. Mm-hmm. So you always have to start from that foundation that We have never been seen as the model of excellence, because that's what these, and also anything that's ever been seen as an appreciation of Black culture has also been seen as the antithesis or unpatriotic to America. So when you deal with those factors, it becomes very difficult to unlearn that as Black culture, because in our minds, we want the best for our kids, and if you want the best for your kids, you send them to the best school. And if the best school has already been established hundreds of years before Black schools even existed, it's almost impossible to get in that race.
That's the truth. All right. Well, we thank you all for joining us tonight. Please chime in and check in again for the next 10-minute break. Peace.